and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. My guest for this episode is Moji Karimi, co-founder and CEO of Symvita Factory, a Houston startup that has created biomimicking technologies to catalyze carbon neutralization in industrial practices. Today, Moji and I will discuss the company's growth, including plans to move into a bigger office and lab space in just a few months. Moji, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
So Symvita Factory is a very fascinating company for me since we first spoke, oh my gosh, like 2 years ago, but I know some people aren't as familiar. So can you explain the company and how the technology works?
Sure. Yeah. So our company started with a kind of a simple yet very complex idea, and that was to mimic photosynthesis, basically to look in nature and take inspiration from where nature could start with CO2. As a molecule, as a feedstock, and then convert that into other useful molecules. In the case of photosynthesis, going from CO2, and water to sugar and oxygen, right? Everyone kind of remembers from high school. Mm-hmm. And the discussion that I had with my co-founder, Tara, who's our CTO and also my sister, was, what if humans could do that? Like, why don't we make things like systems that could start from CO2 and convert that into all kind of chemicals that we need instead of necessarily have to use fossil fuels as the starting carbon source. So that's what we did. And the first reaction that we did was actually the exact classic photosynthesis to go from CO2 to sugar. The first application for that was for deep space exploration to use the CO2 that astronauts breathe out and convert that into sugar so that then they could eat it as a calorie source to kind of create this regenerative life support system on the ISS and, vehicles that go into deep space down the road for Mars because 96% of the air is CO2. And while we were doing that, we knew really the big picture is not just that for a space application, is if we could apply the same methodology for other chemicals that are made with very energy intensive ways. And that would be the way kind of that we could actually help with climate change, where on one hand we have CO2 that's a problem and a liability. There's too much of it, and it's a waste in the way that people think about it. But we had a method that was using it as a valuable starting point. So we started applying that and created, 30 different molecules that we could make from CO2. And from there, started working with the oil and gas industry in identifying what are these exciting pathways that we could enable by using CO2 from flue gas and converting that into chemicals, a lot of the precursors to polymers and plastics. And that's why we have this tagline of carbon negative, right, in the things that we do, because instead of creating emissions, we use emissions in the process.
And I feel like we, even anyone in Houston or anyone in tech or energy, hear the term carbon capture, I think more and more lately. But of course, Symvita is going beyond that because, a lot of big oil companies, carbon capture is a big priority for them to reduce their footprint. So tell me a little bit about why carbon capture has come into its own and being a really big topic of conversation and a really big obstacle and challenge to kind of solve for this industry.
Yeah, because fundamentally, if you think about it, the only problem with oil and gas is the emissions. Mm-hmm. Because other than that, it's a very good way to store energy. We have the infrastructure already for transportation, it's reliable. But emission, before it was not as big of a problem, or at least people kind of ignored it. But now with ESG and everything and all the other trends, it can't be ignored anymore. So then the solution is either you have to create processes that do not create emissions to start with, which is the idea for renewables, right? Like to, solar, wind, or you have to figure out a way to decarbonize the existing processes. And part of that is whatever that, you know, CO2 or greenhouse gas emissions, you know, including methane, or is being emitted, to find a way to capture that. And so that's the carbon capture part. And then to go a step beyond that, which is what Cemvita does, is you capture the carbon, CO2, that's great, congratulations. But now what? What are we going to do with that? And we believe the only way for these systems to really scale and have a business model is to utilize them and make something else that is more valuable. So that's the carbon utilization part, which when you hear people say carbon capture and utilization, these two kind of go hand in hand. A lot of what historically has been done with carbon capture is to then use it either for sequestration, which is just to pump it underground and kind of like hide it underground, or for this process called enhanced oil recovery, where you pump the CO2 into the oil reservoir to kind of, the CO2 would start to mix with the remaining oil, and then you get more oil out. What Cemvita is doing is, why can't we use the carbon in the CO2 to make other type of chemicals like ethylene, you know, like organic acids and chemicals that then could be used to make plastics and polymers and all kind of things?
Yeah, chemistry was not my subject in high school, but I still find it just completely mind-boggling that this is something that you can really do, like take something that no one wants to have to deal with and turn it into something that people can actually use. So when you explain this to potential customers, or when you pitch at pitch competitions, what's the reaction you get? Because I assume it's like mine, where it's just mind blown, the technology that you've created.
Yeah, so it actually depends on who the audience is, because if they come from oil and gas and chemical, they kind of understand the conversion. Mm-hmm. But the next question is like, well, okay, but how do you do it, right? Like, what is inside the box, right? And that's a bit complex to explain, but there's easy ways to think about it, because at the end of the day, what we're using are microbes that happen to love eating CO2. And they do that very efficiently. And through genetic engineering, we make them even more efficient. And, you know, basically we replicate the same process like you see in breweries or in fermentation. But instead of feeding our microbes sugar, we feed them CO2. And instead of beer or like biofuels, they produce the specific chemicals that we want them to produce. So this is not a new technology, in that this is how all pharmaceutics are made. They don't do chemical reactions very much in the pharmaceutics. There used to be a time where they would get the insulin from pancreas of pigs. And then someone said, wait a minute, there is an enzyme that is making that. Can we put that enzyme inside a microbe and then put the microbe in a lab environment in a bioreactor? And they did that, and you know, it's a process that could be engineered, that could be a scale. So that's how they make insulin. And then from there, it expanded into, you know, fragrance and cosmetics. And the latest trend is nutrients, right? Like with the Impossible Whopper, that's made with synthetic biology. You know, they got the gene from soybean that makes the heme, which is the molecule that makes the meat kind of have the color and the aroma and everything that's associated with meat. And then they put that inside a yeast. And now that yeast produces heme, which then they mix with a bunch of other plant-based proteins, and then you have it. So for us, we do the same process, but we focus on chemicals that our customers are interested in. For example, for our bioethylene pathway, we took the gene for ethylene from banana, because turns out bananas in the ripening process produce ethylene. And then we genetically engineer that gene inside the microbe that we have that eats CO2. So now it's making ethylene from CO2. And then we go through the same kind of a scale-up process to build the larger scale facilities that allows for doing that at a very large and commercial scale.
So who are your customers and what do you do for them?
Yeah, that's a great question, even though it's a basic question, but it speaks to the core of value proposition, right? So our customers are, you know, heavy industry companies like oil and gas and petrochemicals and mining, who want to reduce their carbon footprint, but also create a new revenue stream. You know, so it's not just for sustainability reasons. It's just part of the reinvention of the company to maintain kind of their legacy in the, you know, next few decades to come. And the way that we help them is by giving them these tangible ways of using CO2 as a feedstock, by helping them apply low energy intensive methods in the mining operations. And what happens is, and what's happening right now is, the CEOs, basically they go out there and make the climate pledge, right? Oh, we're gonna be net zero by 2040, right? And then guess what? They look back at the business units and say, okay, now you guys go make it happen. And they're like, well, what do we do? Because there's not a lot of off-the-shelf technologies available, say, for CO2 utilization. And that's the gap that we fill. Like, we talk to them and say, okay, we know that this is the challenge, and we have something that we could work together to co-develop specifically for your application to enable, that pathway. This is going to allow you to use a lot of CO2 to put the CO2 out of the cycle, but also create a new revenue stream for the company. And so that's what we've been doing. Oxy is a great example. And then, BHP been with us from the beginning. Just last year, we added another, kind of a Japanese chemical company as a new customer. And then we have several others in the pipeline that we just kind of been waiting for 2021 for us to kind of have a more of a breadth of, foundation of the team to be able to take on new projects, which we're going to do this year. I think we're going to have like 5 more clients just before the end of this year.
So how much of your business is focused with these oil and gas clients, and how much is focused on space?
Yeah, so as of right now, actually most of our focus is on the vertical that we call CO2-based chemicals. And that's for, downstream oil and gas petrochemical companies. Then we have what we call subsurface carbon utilization, which is for upstream oil and gas. That's the idea to use CO2 as a feedstock, but in the oil reservoir, like in the subsurface. And then we have actually, apart from space, we also have a biomining vertical because of the relationship that we had with BHP. Being an investor in Sambita, and they introduced us to a set of applications for cleaning up, mine sites, and basically using microbes as a small mining machines in the mining industry to help them also reduce their footprint, just not just carbon footprint, but also the overall environmental footprint. Because as you know, the mining industry is also providing all these metals that go into all this, EVs and renewables, right? So this kind of circle has to all be sustainable. And then we have this space, which is kind of a smaller part of what we do. Mm-hmm. It's very aspirational. We love it. But, the reality is we have to think about areas where we could actually kind of really grow really big and have a very kind of sustaining and growing business model. And we found that in this area of carbon capture and utilization in upstream, downstream, and also in biomining.
So the process and the technology, I guess, behind it sounds very unique. But how do you see your competition? Is there a lot out there in this space that you are competing with? What does that look like for you, and what's your strategy behind that?
Yeah, so that's an interesting, that's the fun part of a startups, right? There's always like a lot of competition. And the way I think about it is almost like we're like different sports teams, right? We try to hire the best talent. We try to be in the right place, have the right partners. And we have different strategies. So in this area for CO2 utilization, there is a group of companies that do the same thing, but they use different type of technology, like chemical methods or electrochemical methods. They have new catalysts that could use CO2, as a starting point. And so that's one category of companies that are doing that. Then there is, kind of bigger legacy kind of synthetic biology companies like us, who before were doing pharmaceutics and nutrients, but now they're seeing, wait a minute, energy industry is doing all this stuff. So they kind of are getting closer to heavy industry top applications. At the end of the day, we honestly don't think much about competition. We just say, okay, we have these customers, these are the projects that we need to deliver, and that is gonna then help us differentiate ourselves. So that's our focus. Also, this CCUS, carbon capture, utilization, and storage is a very collaborative area. So there's always different partners that are helping kind of to launch a project. So sometimes we may think of these companies as competition, but we end up actually working together. for example, the best example is like carbon capture companies working with carbon neutralization companies, right? Because we kind of need each other. And yeah, so also that this is not like a silver bullet, like one technology is going to like reverse climate change or something like that. So at the end of the day, the more successful that some of these other companies are in opening up the market, that also helps us the same way that we're doing for them. So it's a kind of interesting and collaborative area. And because at the end of the day, the outcome is good for the world, right? So the more all these technologies are successful, I'm happy with that too.
That's great. I mean, I guess in this, with what everyone is trying to solve in this space, yeah, you would hope that it's collaborative with the kind of overall goal that you all have. So mm-hmm. when you think about challenges you're facing, what is that? It sounds like it's not necessarily competition. So what are some of the obstacles that you have on your horizon, especially focusing on maybe your growth stage that you're in?
Yeah, so we have a very particular challenge, which is at the same time the opportunity for us. It's basically that there aren't companies like us that existed before, in that there were not biotech companies that were like working with oil and gas companies for this use case that we have now. So in some ways, we're defining this new category for application of synthetic biology in heavy industries for decarbonization. And when you're dealing with a situation like that and you have different stakeholders, it's really hard to get people on board, because it could be that on one hand, let's say you're talking to a biotech company or investor and they're like, we love everything that you're doing, like the technology, and we get in, but we don't know anything about oil and gas or mining. So we don't know how to help. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you could be talking with oil and gas companies and say, oh, we love that you could use CO2 and do all this stuff, but we don't know anything about these microbes and this stuff that you're saying is foreign to us. And so it's hard to kind of establish that, because it's just going to take time and proof points and case studies. And we've been very aware that this is kind of a specific challenge to Sambita, but at the same time, that is exactly the opportunity. This gray area between these different industries that has not been explored before, part of it because these industries were not talking to each other, and the companies who were synthetic biology companies, they were not in Houston, they were not talking to oil and gas companies. So, you know, it took this long for Sambita to come along and kind of now start to define this category. Of course, with that is the risk. Sometimes, you know, your one way may not be enough to actually establish that. But I think we're a bit past that point already, you know, in between kind of our seed round and what we're doing now. And just since last year, the momentum for the need for this decarbonization technologies is also, as you know, has really, you know, accelerated.
I think one thing that's interesting to me too, when I talk to so many software startups, of course, you know, but there's unique challenges for biotech and for something so science-based is the only way I could describe it. So how much of your team is really focused on like the research and the science behind it? Because I imagine that's an area you really have to devote a lot of focus to.
Yeah, I would say 90%. Like, we're mostly scientists and engineers. I'm the only one, maybe another one, that we don't have PhDs like everybody else. And this is really great, but it's also needed because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, the technology has to work. So, in you know, you mentioned software companies. It's like we have different valleys of deaths, basically, because with them, it's not, the challenge is not as much about, oh, is it possible to make a software that does this and could go like, connect the GPS to this, like to deliver food. That's not the challenge. It's like how to create the network for that, you know, company to take off, right? For us, is the opposite. Is can you do this? Because once you did it, then it's obvious. Then you could go and get many customers and grow from there. It becomes easier. But for hard tech companies like us, like some of the others in Houston that you know, like CCG, right? Like RevTerra, we have that upfront challenge. And once we get it to work, then it becomes easier. So that's why you see right now we have like 90% scientists, and as we grow, it's going to be more and more on the BD side as well, to just, you know, do the commercialization and partnerships and all that.
I also want to ask you, because, you know, you're based here in Houston, your technology touches oil and gas, space, biotech, which are all, you know, industries that Houston has a presence in. So what has it been like to grow your company alongside this growing startup ecosystem in Houston?
I mean, it's been, we're really lucky to be in Houston in that we have all these elements available, right? Like we have, like you mentioned, like we're based in JLabs right now. And, you know, if you're two people was trying to start like biotech company, you just cannot do it. You need to have access to PCR machine, like the things that are so expensive, right? It's like the exact opposite of like starting a software company. And we had that opportunity here in the TMCX to get things started. And then we have, you know, at the end of the day, I believe you got to be where your customers are. So our customers are here for the most part. I mean, they're all around the world, but in the Houston being kind of the center of gravity for oil and gas and petrochemicals and all these refineries. So that's been helpful. And then we have the space part with the legacy of the NASA and Johnson Space Center. And one thing that, you know, I would also mention is, you know, Houston is also very capital efficient. So investors love that. And, you know, to have a lab space built out and move in, like do all this stuff, you could do it pretty inexpensively compared to, say, if it was in Boston. The challenge is some of the applications that we are after with synthetic biology, those type of people, they may not be in Houston. Most of the expertise in microbiology and in molecular biology in Houston is around cancer research, you know, and medical type applications, which is expected. But we're kind of coming up with a way to, when we hire, which we have many times from medical center, we just kind of train everybody because there's a lot of transferable knowledge, and they just kind of hit the ground running and start, you know, they were engineering, you know, human cells before, now they're engineering microbes. And there's a lot of commonality between the two.
Yeah. Your sister and co-founder has that background too, right?
Yeah, I mean, none of this would have been possible if it wasn't because of her background in that area, because I come from oil and gas and I could cover the market side, but, you know, she is the brain behind the technology side. And then we kind of expanded by having other people join us from the medical center. But yeah, I mean, we never imagined that we'll work together, because me being in oil and gas, I was going on drilling rigs, and she was doing tissue engineering and like heart reprogramming of cardiac pacemakers. And there was no connection, right? But because of my last startup experience at Biota, looking at DNA of microbes in the subsurface and the research that she was doing in photosynthesis and her Springer book, we just kind of started to have this organic discussions over dinner or whatnot, and it converged in this area and said, let's start a company.
Yeah, very organic discussion, sounds like. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier a little bit about, you know, being based in JLabs and you know how there's an opportunity in Houston to really grow into some space. So I hear you do have a new office space in the works. So I want to hear a little bit about that and what this opportunity means for the growth of your company.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, with JLabs, we've been there since the beginning, from when it was just me and Tara. We had one bench, and then kind of we grew into a few benches and eventually like a more of a bigger lab in the back. But JLabs is not designed for hosting kind of, you know, later stage companies that have like 20, 30 people working there. And that's part of the design to allow the opportunity for other startups that are like 2 to 3, 4, 5 people to like get kind of their momentum going. And then so we're getting kind of big enough that we could get kicked out of JLabs anyway, anytime soon. And then we also had what we call our scale-up facility, where we engineer the microbes. We took that to the other facility where we have larger scale bioreactors. And because of that, we have like the JLabs team, and then we have the scale-up team. And, you know, I think we decided to go into this new space so everybody could be at the same place. And, you know, for that to kind of integrate some of the workflows that we're doing, make things easier. And then for our scientists to collaborate in a more seamless way. So this new office that we're excited about, you know, it's on Kirby, and it's about 6,000 square feet, and it's going to host both our biotech lab and also a scale-up facility and business operations. And, you know, I think it could host us for, you know, hopefully a few more years, you know, before we need to start thinking about expanding again.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations on that. I think, like you mentioned, JLabs being that opportunity for small, new startups to really grow into their own. So it's really an accomplishment almost to kind of graduate and get mm-hmm. your place, right? So I want to talk a little bit about what 2020 looked like for you. Of course, putting in that COVID pandemic lens, you know, what were some of the obstacles you faced and how did you kind of overcome them? Obstacles and opportunities, I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, 2020 sucked. Let's get that out of the way. There's no like good way to like tell the story, especially because we're a lab company. So we can like work remotely we had to shut down the lab for a few months mm-hmm. At the beginning, kind of from March, I think, to like July. But in that period, we're able to focus on things that we could do from home, like really, you know, work on our IP applications that were overdue, and then submit some really good grant applications, really think through the design for a lot of our bioinformatics tools, things that we could do from home. And then since, you know, the kind of lab reopened at small capacity, we were able to kind of get back. And luckily, none of our projects were delayed. None of them were canceled by our clients, which we're grateful for. And then since Q4 of last year, I felt like things are starting to come back. And customers are feeling more comfortable. You know, the uncertainty of COVID, I think, was kind of more stabilized in that they knew, okay, now we could start planning and approve projects and move forward. So, you know, we kind of got back into the growth mode and, started kind of our fundraising process again and everything else that goes with that. So altogether, I think it was not a good year. The concern that I had was, is COVID going to derail this momentum around sustainability and like decarbonization and like really get people focused only on like the healthcare type of sustainability? It was a real unknown. But then turns out it actually not only it didn't, kind of slow that down, it actually accelerated it because people are now thinking about rebuilding in a sustainable way. More companies came out with their net zero goals and ESG goals, and all that is now kind of coming together to make 2021 a great year.
So what are you focused on in light of all of this that you mentioned, the obstacles you've overcome and you're sitting down and focusing on on everything you just mentioned? What are you now focused on for 2021?
So we have, you know, kind of on the logistical side of things, we have the fundraising to kind of provide more resources to the company to grow faster and capture this opportunity that's in front of us. So we have that. And then, you know, for us, again, going back to what I was saying about hard tech companies, we are really focused on having a few of those like early proof points where we have kind of kicked these projects from doing engineering the microbe in the lab to scale up to where we're actually starting to build up kind of demonstration plants that shows people, oh, you could come and see, here goes the CO2, here comes the product, you know, and have those to build on kind of expansion and also adding new projects to the pipeline. And I think it's also the year that our company is starting to go kind of from a startup into kind of growth mode. It's really strange, like going from like 4 or 5 people to where now you have like layers, and now we have to think about, oh, we need an HR person, we need like a, you know, second accounting person and that sort of thing, which we're trying to figure out in terms of logistics, but also maintain the vision, kind of a culture for the company. And honestly, moving this into this new office was part of that strategy, because then you're there, you could kind of build a closer relationship with the team. And so that's kind of the plan for 2021, you know, apart from specific metrics that we have for our revenue and like team members and, you know, things like that.
Well, it sounds like a real time for growth and development for you and for Sanvita. So congratulations on that. And thanks so much for joining me today to catch up and really see what all you've accomplished and where you're going.
Thank you. Yeah, we could come back to this interview a few years down and, you know, reminisce about the early days of Tambita.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a whole different, I'm sure, in just a matter of a couple of years, a whole different interview.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.